And of course, but Oleana refuses to fill out the form to replace it.
Oh, no!
Alder snorted and wiped away a small tear of laughter with his finger.
Oh, yes. The sergeant arrives, like, 2 hours later, and Oleana's wearing Private Exandra's fatigues. But Exandra's twice her height, right? She looks ridiculous, like a little girl wearing her mother's dress.
Kes snorted fondly and almost choked on her drink.
So, we're standing in line for inspection, and Oleana's just there, hungover out of her mind, trying her best to look normal. The sergeant hasn't slept for about 2 days at this point, and almost passes her by.
Kes did a double take in perfect imitation of her old sergeant.
But then turns around, eyes wide, and says...
Alder started roaring with laughter at this point.
She says...
Kes went on, tears in her eyes.
Gods damn you, Alexandra, you really raided the potions locker. I was only joking!
Ed and Catalin chuckled while Alder smacked the table with both hands, bent over like he was suffering from stomach pains.
Oh, gods!
He said between breaths.
The sergeant mistook Oleana for...
He sniffed, cleaned his chin with his sleeve, and hiccuped.
Classic case of charm failure,
Catalin said. She was sprawled over her chair, like a cat, using her cape as a blanket. Ed sighed fondly and stared at the small cluster of empty jars accumulating in the center of the table.
We've probably had enough, he told Catalin.
Alder and Kess's conversation had devolved into guttural laughter and the kind of references that only made sense if heard from the bottom of a glass. He could see the faint outline of the moon past the frosted window.
When did it get so late?
Perhaps.
Catalin stifled a yawn and batted her eyelashes in a way that Ed found hypnotic.
I admit I feel a bit tired.
She gave Kes a meaningful look.
Nonsense! Exclaimed Alder. One of his eyes was half closed. It's far too early for that. We're celebrating, damn it!
Ed gave Kes another meaningful look. The mercenary rolled her eyes, smirked, and patted Alder on the back.
Come on, friend bard. These two clearly lack our endurance. I say we take the fight to the enemy lines.
She gestured in the direction of the taverns and whorehouses across the street, whose lights shone like stars through the windows.
But...
Alder's nose scrunched in confusion.
They've barely touched their drinks.
Ed gave him the best innocent stare that his charm ranks could afford. Alder glanced at him and Catalin with suspicion, which was replaced by a dawning realization, and then disappointment. He shook his head sadly.
Maybe I don't feel like partying anymore, he said,
then crossed his arms. Kes received another two meaningful looks. The hints of a mocking smile flared on her lips, but the mercenary put on a serious, business-like expression and slipped an arm across Alder's shoulders.
Are you really going to reject the call of adventure, Alder?
Alder glanced at her with a dubious frown.
Imagine the chances for song-worthy deeds that await us just a short walk down the street,
Kes said. She stood up, and the bard did the same at her urging.
Tell me, have you ever partied with a Volantian before?
Alder shook his head.
Then you've a golden opportunity that any bard would kill for,
Kes said smoothly.
Trust me, I know places in the city that not even the local thieves dare tread. Think of the songs, Alder. Think of the adventure.
Damn, Ed thought. She's good at this.
At first, the idea seemed to please Alder. Kes ushered him away from the table and toward the exit as he mulled over her words. Then he muttered something that Ed couldn't hear very well, but which sounded something like,
What do you mean a place that thieves don't dare tread?
But by then, Kes had him halfway through the door. Alder threw Ed one last glance, this one demanding rescue. Ed gave him an ashamed shrug that had the same meaning across Ivalis and Earth, and probably the rest of the multiverse. It meant, Sorry, man, but you would do the same in my place. The last thing he saw from the bard, for the night, was his middle finger. Catalin watched with an amused glint in her eye as the bard and the mercenary disappeared through the doors.
So, Ed said, are you still feeling a bit tired?
She played with a strand of her hair and flicked it away from her forehead.
What a strange thing. I'm suddenly reinvigorated.
She examined her mug.
Maybe someone spilled a vitality potion inside this.
That's actually an interesting idea, he mused. I'll have to remember it. Sadly, Ivalis had no laptops with which to take notes. Catalin grinned and went back to playing with her hair, which kept finding its way back onto her forehead. Ed could swear they had been sitting farther apart just a few minutes ago. All right, he thought. I'll forgive you the lack of laptops, Ivalis.
So,
Catalin said,
tell me about your adventuring profession.
Are you sure? Ed asked. He looked around. No one seemed to be eavesdropping. He scratched his chin and sought a good place to start that wouldn't sound too obvious if someone overheard. It's different from what I expected. Every time I think I'm getting the hang of it, I stumble into some new, mostly dangerous shit. Hell, even the food can be lethal. You should see our chicken farms. It's insane. He shrugged. But, you know what? I enjoy it. Maybe it means I'm as crazy as everyone else around here. Catalin, if anything, was a good listener. She examined his words as carefully as she would have studied a gem.
Sounds fun,
she said.
Is it as dangerous as they say?
She asked hopefully.
I mean, I keep hearing of adventurers, I mean, getting killed left and right, but they keep popping up like rabbits in a garden.
Ed considered his answer. His life was dangerous, but from what he knew of Ivalis, it was dangerous for everyone, including batblins, horned spiders, and innocent villagers. Intelligent life here, it seemed, always had someone or something farther up on the food chain which found them tasty. Truth be told, although my life is dangerous, at least I have the chance to defend myself. Heron offered me power, and he did fulfill his part of the deal. I can do magic without training when everyone else has to learn it slowly. My drones are a builder's dream come true. My allies are capable, smart, decent people. If a mind brood attacked, he'd rather have them by his side than the Inquisition, for example. On the other hand, given what he knew of Catalin, well, he could guess at the kind of answer she'd rather hear. His conscience fought his baser instincts across a brutal mental war that lasted about half a second.
Oh yes, he said. Terribly dangerous.
He passed a finger across his neck with an exaggerated motion.
I keep meeting people that want to kill me. It's insane. You wouldn't believe how many experience points I've been racking in this last month alone. Danger all the time, oh yes. Not even counting the eldritch abomination that keeps barging into my room while I'm sleeping to throw me inside undead-infested catacombs.
He felt a brief pang of shame. At least he'd enough dignity to stop himself before asking if she wanted to see the small cut on his forearm where Scar's dagger had nicked him. Catalin barked an amused laugh.
Oh, really?
She grinned in a way that made it clear that she saw through his transparent bullshit, but at the same time wanted to hear more.
Are catacombs filled with undead part of your normal day-to-day life?
She rested her chin on her hands and batted her eyelids at him again. Ed took a sip of ale to wet his dry throat.
He said. Not exactly.
He desperately looked for anything dangerous to share with her that, at the same time, didn't involve a brain-eating monster that thought of itself as a little girl.
Because that would surely kill the mood. Horned spiders are, though. They're our allies now, but before that, a single misstep and they'd have turned us into snacks.
His remaining spiderling stirred under his jacket.
They don't seem to bother you now,
Catalin said.
Yes, well, we came to an understanding.
The grandmother of his spiderling now served as a trophy over his fireplace. Would the Ed from Earth have been proud of that brutality? He had no way to know. Maybe Murmur's pact hadn't changed him, but Ivalis had, and now he could only remember his self from before as a faint afterimage. Catalin stirred in her chair and let the air escape from her lungs in a placid yawn.
Can I share something with you?
She stretched.
If Heron had offered me a pact when I was younger, I may have accepted.
Ed nodded.
I think I can guess why you would have.
He yawned too, despite himself.
What made you decide otherwise?
All that excitement,
she said wistfully.
The people, the adventures, the experience points. But in the end, your kind can't get very far from their lairs, can they? Not like vampires, who need to lie on their natal soil during the day. I mean, all these powers you have revolve around finding a strategic location and fortifying it. Then you stay there, day after day.
She glanced at the frosted window.
In the end, the place becomes more famous than the man. It devours him.
Ed had a vague inkling that she wasn't talking about his dungeon. Not really. He also suspected he'd need several more ranks in spirit to figure her out on his own. Instead, he simply asked her,
What do you mean?
Oh, I don't know,
she said.
It's this city. A lovely place for someone like me, filled with lovely people, as long as you stay away from the windows. But...
She snapped her fingers softly and grimaced, seemingly searching for the right words.
No matter how hard I try, it seems like I cannot get very far from myself. Half the guild's members arrived here before me in New Torst, one way or the other. And when they see me, they see him too. So, you know... Sometimes I wonder if what I need is a change of scenery. Perhaps somewhere sunny, like Plekth. Lots of excitement to be had there.
She smiled again.
And a remarkable lack of angry wraiths.
Ed rested his back against his chair and stared at the ceiling.
This is the reason I can't trust a character sheet, even if it never lies. If I were to look at, say, the stats of Karmic and Catalan, I bet I'd see similar numbers. But one is in love with a mercenary who broke his ribs and won't ever reciprocate, and the other is in love with a continent she barely knows, because it sounds exciting and no one knows her.
It also told him that, whatever he and Catalan had going on tonight, it wouldn't last.
One day very soon she's going to leave for Plekth.
And she was right about his own nature. He was tied to the haunt. And not because of his powers, but of his own volition. He stirred, then looked at her, sprawled on her chair and staring at the window with a distant smile, drowning in wanderlust, but not knowing it. She was lovely, and ephemeral. And she caught him looking.
So,
she said,
we've gone out twice. First time, we went exploring under city's catacombs and farmed undead and cultists for experience points. Second time, we walked through the harbor and met my old friend Oscar. Any suggestions for the third time?
Ah, I know a dangerous place we can go to. Right now, actually, Ed said. Why not? We won't be together for long, but that makes it all the more precious. It's just upstairs.
She snorted softly and raised him an eyebrow.
Dangerous, you say? Tell me more.
Well, it may be full of Staravosian rebels, Ed said, or with life-draining undead. Hell, the Inquisition could be there waiting, their bonfire already lit up.
She pursed her lips playfully and fixed her hair again.
The Inquisition? In that case, we better not keep them waiting. I hear they don't have the best of tempers.
She stood up.
Shall we?
There were no assassins or inquisitors in the room. Not that Ed and Catalan looked for them. As soon as he closed the door behind them, Catalan slipped her hands behind his neck and locked them in place. Their lips found each other's in the shadows of the barely lit room. Her kisses were blazing hot against the cold air of Undercity and carried with them an aftertaste of fruity ale and peanuts. Ed could feel her respiration against his neck. The hair of his skin stood on end, and he encircled her waist and pulled her closer. An unexpected barrier came between them. The chest pieces of their leather armor. Ed frowned, and his fingers searched for the straps of Catalan's armor. He felt a ticklish sensation run down from his chest to his leg as his spiderling, whose presence he had forgotten, ran away from a sudden and unwelcome movement. It scuttled across the room and hid under the bed in only a few seconds. Ed ignored it. She laughed and raised her arms to give him a better angle.
Best of luck. Sometimes not even I can get the damn thing to come off.
Her tone was amused, but her eyes glinted with expectation. Ed found one strap, undid it, then discovered with dismay a cluster so confusing that it had required divine intervention to sort out. He considered using a knife to undo them, then immediately discarded the idea because Catalin wouldn't enjoy having her armor destroyed. Instead, he decided for a more reasonable tactic.
"I'm going to need another set of hands here," he told her, "unless you don't mind spending the entire night waiting for me to undress you."
He took away her coat and threw it onto a nightstand. She grinned, kissed him again, and her hands disappeared behind her back. As she fumbled with her straps, her back arched, and Ed was treated to the view of the taut muscles of her abdomen, lithe and powerful, and the soft lines of her neck while she turned her head to get a better view of her work. Ed forgot what he was waiting for. He pinned her against the wall and kissed her hungrily, her hands trapped behind her back. Their breathing grew ravenous, demanding. A moan escaped from her parted lips, and Ed's pants became suddenly too tight. Unbearable. With one hand, he fumbled with his trousers, and he slid the other under Catalin's armor, found her breast, and grabbed it firmly, hot and soft against his own skin. Catalin quivered under his embrace.
"Cold hands, arsehole,"
she whispered angrily, but Ed's hand grew warm quickly enough as it traveled down her breastbone and caressed her abdomen and the small of her back. She freed one of her arms and slid it across his shoulders, using it to lift herself above him. He carried her weight, barely realizing he was doing so, as her hair cascaded over his face, filling his nose with her intoxicating scent. She hugged his waist with her legs, drawing him so close against hers that it was almost painful. Ed's lips traveled down her neck, then he bit it softly, which drew a mesmerizing moan from her. Her chest piece fell to the floor with a metallic tinkling of knives, and she went to work on his as he fumbled with her shirt with all the dexterity of a drunk 13-year-old boy. Under the bed, the red eyes of the spiderling followed them with disinterest, probably wondering if the female would bite the male's head off after mating was over. Above the bed, past the frosted window, Undercity's nightlife ebbed like a living organism. Fights broke off and died, sailors sang obscene songs at the top of their lungs, and thieves whistled innocently as they hustled the streets. Close to Stormbreaker Harbor, people slept during the day and lived by night, which made it a heavily desired hunting ground for vampires and revelers alike. The screams, the growls, the songs, the lovemaking, the death throes, and the laughter all conspired to drown the noises coming from one of the upper rooms of the Galleon's Folly. But even for Stormbreaker Harbor, there was a time when people needed to sleep, or at least hide in their coffins when the sunlight drew near. When that time came, a few hours before sunrise, when the sky was still dark but the stars were discreetly fading away, it found Ed and Catalin spent in bed, hiding under a mountain of blankets, the bedsheets drenched with sweat. He was lying on his back, doing his best to get his breathing under control, while she rested her head against his chest, her own rising and falling with the rhythm of heavy sleep.
"So, that just happened," he thought dumbly, in that mental space seconds away from unconsciousness.
He glanced at Catalin's wavy hair, which covered most of his field of vision. He felt like remaining very, very still, as not to wake her. On the other hand, his ass itched. Straw mattresses provided the most uncomfortable rest he had ever had in his entire life. He considered his options. Catalin was sleeping atop his right arm, which was falling asleep more and more by the second. His left was, sadly, opposite of the itch, so he'd have to shift and turn to reach it, which would wake her up. The door opened and smacked against the wall. The noise was like a cannonball, which thankfully drowned Ed's scream. Catalin jolted awake and tried at the same time to vault over the bed and reach for a knife that wasn't there. Instead, she fumbled with the bedsheets and fell face first to the floor, like a rabbit caught in a horned spider's web. Ed saw the lamplight outline two human silhouettes.
"Oh, shit," he thought. "I forgot they were coming back."
"Oh, shit," mumbled Alder. "I forgot you guys were here."
He sighed and shook his head.
"Well, too bad.
We have no money to rent another room.
The bard stumbled inside, one hand over Kess's shoulders, half carrying the mercenary, half dragging her. Something icky dropped against the floorboards with the exact sound of jelly smacking against wood. Ed did a double take and realized Alder and Kess were covered, head to toe, in slime. Alder's was green, Kess's was a mixture of blue and yellow. Their clothes were soaked, and their boots sloshed with each footstep.
"What the hell happened to you two?" asked Ed.
"Is that slime?"
Catalin mumbled, somewhere inside the heap of sheets in front of the bed. Kess was muttering angrily, barely conscious, one eye closed and her eyelid covered in a blob of yellow slime. She coughed, moaned, and tossed her longsword to one of the other straw bunks nearby while angrily cursing Alder. Her words were either unintelligible, or in a different language, or both.
"Really, lady?"
Alder said with a grunt as he summarily dropped her next to her weapon. There were no other bunks.
"I carry you all the way back here, and I have to sleep on the floor?"
He studied the room, probably searching for rats.
"Did you get into a fight?" Ed asked.
Alder turned around so Catalin could usher herself back under her bedsheets. Then he spread his coat and jacket over the floor to make a makeshift bed.
"Actually,"
he said, sloshing through each syllable,
"we agreed never to mention it again."
He wearily slid out of half his remaining clothes, did his best to clean out as much slime as he could, then lay himself to sleep.
"What are they soaked in?" Ed asked Catalin in a whisper.
I'm not sure,"
the thief said.
"There are a couple possibilities. Each of them either disgusting or terrifying."
She refused to elaborate.
"Sorry, Ed," Alder mumbled groggily. "You know how it is. What happens in Stormbreaker?"
The bard choked on a bit of green slime. He made a gagging noise, then whimpered, and finally fell asleep with the tiniest hint of a grin on his lips. Chapter 19. The Portal. Nikolai's grin didn't reach his eyes.
"Brandon,"
he said, as the elf slid inside the warehouse like, well, like a thief in the night.
"What a pleasure to see you. We'd started to wonder when you'd show up."
Nikolai went to meet him, arms outstretched, and embraced Brandon briefly. As he did so, he made sure to check the elf's pulse, which skyrocketed in response to Nikolai's proximity.
"Smart man,"
Nikolai thought as he pulled away. This time, his grin was genuine. Brandon sniffed loudly. He was pale and sickly-looking, his eyes red and bloodshot.
"Sorry, Nikolai. I would have come up sooner, but I almost fucking died last night. Fell into freezing water, you see."
He gestured at his boots with a pained expression.
"Lost my boots as I swam out, and then lost two fingers because of the walk home."
The elf drew a flask of a mid-strength restoration potion and took a long swig out of it.
"I'm mostly standing because of this potion. Tastes like piss, you know. And so damn expensive."
"I don't care if you lost your entire lower body, you idiot. Fingers can be replaced, my friend. You should have come sooner. Now, go ahead and tell me what happened. I already know most of it anyway. Your own people report better than you do."
Brandon's usefulness was quickly coming to an end, more so now that the guild had realized that it was Brandon who had been funneling funds out of their coffers and siphoning them into Nikolai's. Nikolai wouldn't kill him, though. For all his ails, Brandon had been a part of his family, and he was a Sterevosian. Third generation. It had to count for something, and Nikolai always tried his best not to kill a Sterevosian unless he had no better option.
"Of course, that won't stop me from letting the guild catch up to you."
The thief sniffed again and gave a wet cough. A speck of saliva hit Nikolai's face, and he had to restrain himself from breaking the elf's neck.
"The guild's informants found out that a group of three individuals bypassed the city walls last night. It matched what you told us about a dungeon lord's range of capabilities, so I went to take a closer look. Brought three other guild members with me for good measure. It was Edward Wright, with two others, a bard and an elf mercenary." Perhaps avian. I didn't see a sheet.
Go on, said Nikolai, who couldn't care less about the race of a random mercenary.
He was busy boiling with anger.
You idiot. You damn idiot. So you knew a dungeon lord was prowling about and you confronted him with only three others?
He couldn't believe that people like Brandon were even capable of getting out of bed in the morning. The thief thought that his decent mind ranks made him smart, but he lacked the spirit to realize when he was being an irrational idiot.
To kill a dungeon lord, you use overwhelming force and hit him hard before he realizes what's going on. He can give his last monologue after you break all the bones in his body.
Almost killed him, Nikolai, the elf said, puffing out his frail chest. Should have seen me. He made a gesture with his thumb and index finger. Came this close, but the cowardly dung-eater cast a spell on me when I was distracted, right when I had him.
Sorry to hear that. Big of you to call a man a coward after you ambush him in the night. Then again, according to your own friends, you had the goal to stop and have a chat with him before attacking him. Why buy sneak attack at all if you're too stupid to use it in the first place?
If Undercity ever grew rich enough to garner the attention of the legendary Assassin's Guild, the poor, stupid thieves were going to bite the dust hard and fast.
The others managed to give him the slip, Brandon went on. Barely survived. That Edward Wright is ruthless, I tell you. Ruthless. No honor at all. Cursing me while I was distracted.
Brandon shook his head and spat out a greenish blob.
Beric the Shoemaker says Wright is staying at the Galleon's Folly tonight, with none other than Catelyn Locksmith.
Brandon's face was red with anger.
Beric says he saw them all over each other before they headed upstairs. That fucking whore! He exclaimed, crossing his arms.
He spat again, not even trying to conceal his anger.
She mocks me! Us, and ruins our ritual at the catacombs, and then fucks the dungeon lord.
Nikolai couldn't help but roll his eyes. It was a well-known bit of guild gossip that Brandon had pined over Catelyn for years.
Rollum believes you're only swayed by money, friend Brandon, he thought. He's always thinking the best of people.
Still, he took notice of Catelyn's relationship to Edward, mainly because it added her to Nikolai's list of 20.
We should go get them, Brandon said, wiping his mouth with his sleeve. They're vulnerable now. Easy prey. We can bring the rebels and the wraith, and they'll never know what hit them. Then you can do whatever you want with Wright, he added hopefully.
Nikolai's patience was running out. This time, his words carried an edge.
An animal fights harder when cornered, friend Brandon.
He passed a hand across the elf's shoulders and ushered him farther into the warehouse. As they passed, members of the rebel group saluted Nikolai. Most of them were headed his way, but waited to let him pass.
I'd rather not have Edward Wright go all out inside the Sterevosian city. No, not even Undercity. If he lost his calm during the struggle and used his dark powers, the Inquisition would know a dungeon lord was present in the city.
He tightened the grip on Brandon's shoulders. He was walking so fast that the elf had to jog or be dragged along.
They're watching Sterevos after what happened in Barova with Ione, who was a better man than you'll ever be. And our tool. If they decide that Undercity needs a cleansing, not even the riches of the Brewers Guild and the local militant church would dissuade them.
They would burn it all. Stormbreaker Harbor and Molesius Heights alike.
But, Brandon said, if we ambush him...
Anger surged like a red-hot iron through Nikolai's veins.
The lives of 50,000 of my people are not up to gamble.
Brandon whimpered and tried to escape Nikolai's touch. For a second there, the rebel had lost control, and his body had rippled as the parasite stirred inside him. With an effort of will, Nikolai let the elf go and fought to calm his heart rate, and thus, the thing he carried in his innards.
You're dead,
he told it sternly, as if willing it to believe the fact.
Dead. You're only a tool, that's all. A tool whose power is mine to command.
Still, he took out his own flask and drank heavily from the tranquility potion it contained. The dead parasite slept again.
My apologies.
Nikolai said as his body relaxed.
These are trying times for everyone.
He slowed his gait to let Brandon catch up to him. The elf did so, but kept an arm length between them.
Attacking Edward Wright inside the city is too risky. It's also unnecessary. Preparations are done and over as of now. The circles are complete, and the rituals are almost finished. They wait only for my command.
He patted the long sword fitted to his belt, adding emphasis to his words.
We'll overrun Wright's dungeon on his home turf with overwhelming force, and put him and all his minions to the sword before he even realizes what's happening. He'll never see us coming, Brandon. And we'll do it without the Inquisition ever finding out about his existence.
The prospect ushered forth a wave of pleasure so intense that Nikolai feared it had awakened the dead parasite again. The wails of the damned rose in intensity as if reacting to his words. Nikolai and the thief reached the central section of the warehouse, a nest of empty iron cages, dozens of them, each fitted with straw bunks and feeding trays. The air was heavy with the smell of human shit and fear, and some cages were marred with dry, crusty blood. Brandon gagged at the smell.
Wetlands!
He swore.
A sad affair, Nikolai said sadly. But a necessary one. Rest assured, not a single man or woman captive here had a single drop of Sterovosian blood in their veins, and we are keeping their suffering to a minimum.
Ah,
Brandon said, covering his nose with his sleeve.
Gods, that makes it all better.
He scowled and fixated his gaze on the floor as they walked. Nikolai chuckled without mirth. The summoning circle came forward and the congregation of rebels in red capes revealed themselves past the rows of empty cages.
Funny. I hadn't thought you capable of sarcasm. People are so full of surprises.
A chant spread across the summoning circle, arcane words practiced through weeks and weeks of repeating the incantations. When Nikolai stepped inside the chamber, the chant grew in intensity, and a flutter of excitement spread across the faces of the rebels, most of whom were covered head to toe in their red capes. At their feet, the summoning circle glowed with purple lines of power. Softly at first, but Nikolai knew it had gained power soon. About 50 naked men and women, mostly human, but a wide variety of species was present, lay tied inside the circle, surrounded by the rebels, their eyes wide with fear and their mouths gagged. Nikolai saw lines of slobber coming down chins, pools of urine spreading across the magic circle. Thankfully, it wouldn't mar the ley lines, and the trembling and whimpering of old and young alike, muffled screams and mad pleading drowned by the rebels' chanting. Rollum oversaw the ritual from one corner of the room. Unlike the rebels, who were lightly armored, if they were armored at all, Rollum wore a chainmail hauberk over a studded leather chest piece, with plate bracers and greaves over his arms and legs. The burly warrior shot dark glances at every rebel who dared fumble a word of the complex eldritch language. Even the smallest mistake produced a feedback effect and tendrils of purple lightning that surged above the circle and filled the place with the smell of ozone and sulfur.
We are ready to send the first wave,
Rollum told Nikolai when the rebel leader reached him.
On your order.
Nikolai nodded, pleased.
Where is our resident diviner?
He asked, looking around. At a gesture of Rollum, two rebels at the opposite end of the chamber brought the diviner to Nikolai. The spellcaster was in a sorry state, the edges of his tunic stained with dirt and grime, and his face as pale and sickly-looking as Brandon's. Just like the elf, Manfred could barely keep his sight away from the sorry scene inside the magic circle. All those men and women whose lives they had spent, or would spend, in the name of the cause.
This is wrong,
Manfred muttered. His hands trembled from pixie dust withdrawal. It said much about his mental condition that he was able to feel anything at all about the sacrifices. Nikolai judged that the diviner would break soon. Probably wouldn't cast a spell ever again.
It does not matter. We got what we needed out of him.
Unlike Brandon, Manfred didn't belong to Nikolai's family.
It's necessary, Nikolai told him. You have the map with you?
He extended an expectant hand. Manfred ignored him for an instant, his expression cold and distant. That was the pixie dust right there. He reached inside his tunic. Behind him, the two rebels drew their daggers and produced a parchment roll, which he handed to Nikolai. The rebels lowered their weapons.
Ah, excellent, Nikolai said, extending the roll in front of him.
It showed a map of a section of Hoya Forest, lines burned with precise magical fire across the surface of the parchment. It represented the area of influence of Edward Wright's dungeon.
Excellent job, Manfred. This is just what we needed.
Can I go now?
Manfred asked, a dead expression across his face. Nikolai dismissed him with a wave of his hand. His part in the ritual had ended hours ago, and the diviner headed out, probably to take another hit of dust. Brandon looked at the map over Nikolai's shoulder.
You really think we have enough manpower to take an area that size?
Brandon asked, raising an eyebrow. Despite the thief's lack of common sense, he had a decent mind score. Nikolai put aside his disgust and spoke to the elf as if they were equals, because Brandon's opinions may actually be worth a damn in this phase.
Most of it is Horned Spider territory, said Nikolai, pointing with his finger. Wright's cluster is scattered at the moment, currently in conflict with the rest of the clusters in the forest.
He traced a direct line to the center of the map, a bunch of steep, rocky hills with jagged tops which oversaw a deep valley dense with vegetation.
As long as we move quickly, we won't have to concern ourselves with the spiders.
He tapped at the X at the center of the map, next to two simple words. The Haunt.
This is our objective, and we start about an hour away. Enough distance to secure the area and establish a safe perimeter to create the last summoning circle.
Brandon's eyes followed the direction of Nikolai's finger.
So, instead of dealing with a huge area of influence, we'll only concern ourselves with Wright's dungeon? That's risky. Even Inquisitors expect huge losses when invading a dungeon, and only the most powerful adventurers face them on their own.
We're ready, Nikolai assured him. The men are brave, and they're equipped with potions, runes, and weapons of good quality. Manfred Scrying found no undead in Wright's service, no Kaftar, and no dark creature to defend his hold. He has a rabble of Batblins, a group of villagers, traitors to their country, the lot of them, and a few human minions. Besides,
Nikolai shot the elf a happy grin.
We have a monster of our own, don't we?
The Wraith,
Brandon muttered. He glanced in the direction of the second section of the magical circle, the one where most of the hostages lay.
Are you sure we can control it?
We don't need to control it, Nikolai said. We only need to point it in the right direction and it will do our job for us.
He traced another line, this time an arc, that avoided the direct route to the haunt, instead reaching it by the side closer to the hills, deep within the forest.
And while the dungeon lord deals with the Wraith, we'll infiltrate the haunt here.
The thief's uncertainty seemed to fade by the second.
I've seen the Wraith in action. Hell, the three of us have. If it attacks Wright, there's no chance he can survive it. No chance at all. Much less after...
He stole a disgusted glance at the hostages.
After it feeds.
He licked his lips.
Without the dungeon lord to deal the dungeon's defense.
Brandon nodded at Nikolai approvingly.
Yes, it will work.
The plan was simple. They'd loose the Wraith and its specters in the forest and funnel them to Wright's haunt. Nikolai had seen Edward react rationally when the Wraith attacked them in the catacombs. He thought things through and chose a course of action that had saved them from the Wraith's fear aura, and at the same time protected him from Nikolai's vengeance.
Thing is, Nikolai thought, you can predict the actions of a rational man just as much as a greedy one. When Edward sees the Wraith and his specters coming, he'll take the best course of action, given his limited knowledge.
To fight a group of incorporeal entities inside a dungeon, where they could pass through ceilings and walls and attack without warning, was folly. Edward would choose to bring his forces outside and order his loved ones to take refuge within the dungeon. And while Edward fought the Wraith, Nikolai and his forces would pay the haunt a visit.
You'll come back to find the people you swore to protect in the same condition you left Lindis,
Nikolai thought, with a surge of hate burning through the tranquility potion at an alarming rate. Rollum grunted loudly, clearly voicing his discontent with Nikolai's plan.
Nikolai,
the man said, drawing near and lowering his voice so the rebels wouldn't hear him disagree with their leader.
After we do this, we won't be able to use the Wraith again. The Inquisition will scry its presence in the forest, and they'll come deal with it. We'll waste a valuable asset killing a dungeon lord who poses little threat to us.
Rollum scowled.
Are you sure you want to do this? There's still time to return to our original plan. We summon the Wraith to Milesius Heights Gardens, set it loose there, get lots of rich foreign assholes killed.
There was a glimmer of mad desire in Rollum's eyes. He hated the Haligians as much as Nikolai did, after all.
Won't that better advance our cause? We bring chaos to Undercity, destabilize Haligi's rule, and grow in strength so we can oppose the Inquisition when the time is right.
By now, he was spewing Nikolai's arguments back at him. Nikolai smiled sadly and shook his head.
That's the problem with you, my friend. Always a romantic. Yes, unleashing the Wraith in Milesius was our original plan. That ship has sailed, though.
He placed a comforting hand on the warrior's shoulder.
Don't you see? There will always be another undead we can raise against the Heligian tyrants. Or we can ask our secretive sponsor for more tools like the one he provided Ion and us.
He caressed his flask with his free hand, checking to see if it still carried enough potion.
Nikolai,
Rollum started.
But a dungeon lord?
Nikolai's expression darkened.
A dungeon lord is a blight more dangerous to our beloved land than a group of rich merchants, Rollum. A dungeon lord is a leech that devours all life around him as he grows in power, until there's nothing left.
He took a step forward, away from his friend, and raised his voice so that everyone could hear him.
Dungeon lords destroy villages to steal their resources and execute entire populations so their dungeons can have prettier walls. They aren't like us. They aren't even like our enemies. They bring wanton murder without reason, suffering without purpose. They're a sword that guts for the joy of it, who serve no country and recognize no authority except that of their dark god. Murmur.
The chanting diminished in intensity as people's attention fixated on him. The crackle of purple lightning above them grew in intensity, threatening to overload the circle's safety measures.
Worse, a dungeon lord brings the wrath of the Inquisition with them. Remember what happened to Kaelar Padel. His dungeons were razed to the ground, and everything that surrounded them died. Everyone slightly related to him or his service was hunted down and executed by Inquisitors. Everyone here knew someone who died during the Purge. Friends, family, lovers. Dungeon lords see our beloved people as tools. Are they?
At this, the few rebels not tied to manning the magic of the circle screamed angry denials.
We call ourselves the will of Sturevos,
Nikolai went on.
But how can we be the will of our homeland if we aren't willing to excise its parasites? Should that be the work of the Inquisition, like it claims?
No!
Roared his rebels.
No! No!
We won't let them!
Death! Death to Alita's lapdogs!
Their loyalty warmed Nikolai's heart. He threw a glance at Rollum's face, and he saw mixed feelings that he couldn't recognize. Fear? Love? Both looked the same to Nikolai when observed over the eldritch, unholy light.
No!
He roared, along with his rebels.
No, we won't! Burning the blight out of Sturevos is our sacred duty, and we shall uphold it!
Purple energy thundered above his head, where a dark cloud of energy was forming. It was time.
Today, we make our ancestors proud. The innocent souls we send their way will be remembered as martyrs, their names engraved in Galtia's castle when the flag of our kingdom rises again upon its towers. Today, we make Duke Finnell proud!
He signaled at the magical circle, and the incantation grew in intensity as the final stanzas were sung. The purple energy encircled the dark cloud as if a tornado was trying to form inside the warehouse. One of the hostages was caught by the end of a feedback spark, and his head exploded in a shower of blood and gore. But the chanting didn't stop. It couldn't. They were committed. For it was portal magic they were casting, powered by human sacrifice, and stopping now would bring forth into reality beings far worse than dungeon lords or the Inquisition. The only option left was to push forward and finish the job. Which was how Nikolai had lived his entire life. He would have it no other way. His hair stood on end, like a cat's, as the magical energy reached a crescendo of raw power. The arcane ley lines of the circle were brought to life. Strange voices, voices that human throats couldn't imitate, joined the chorus for the briefest of instants. Reality rippled, as if time and space were but a lake and a child had thrown a stone into it. The portal opened. And then, silence. A snowy field spread in the middle of the magical circle, seemingly through a giant crack in an invisible wall. Cold seeped inside the warehouse, carrying a hint of snowflakes with it. The smell of winter reached Nikolai's nostrils, and a river of memories awoke inside him. His childhood, running and laughing among the oaks. Spraveska, his brother and father, working the fields, blissfully unaware of the grim fate that awaited them. And Lindis, her face torn from her skull.
"This is for you,"
Nikolai whispered, making sure no one could hear him. He stepped inside the portal, and his warriors followed. While Brandon watched, paralyzed by awe and terror, as Nikolai bridged the gap between Hoya and Undercity with a single step, the spiderling slid out of his armor, unseen, and scurried away from the rebels in the Eldritch Circle. The spiderling was too young to have a voice or a name, but it was born to follow the commands of its mother, and she had ordered the cluster to follow the will of Lord Wright. So the spiderling's will was the will of the Dungeon Lord, and the Dungeon Lord had told it to observe and report back. The nooks and crannies of the old warehouse provided excellent hiding places for the creature. It had the stealth skill as its birthright, the only way a singular spiderling could hope to survive until adulthood in the unforgiving forest. Hiding inside the first thief's armor had been easy. It only had to remain very still and wait for him to meet with the elf. To the spiderling, all humanoid mammals were alike, pinkish blobs of exposed skin and soft, swollen tissue, with hair in all the wrong places. But it could distinguish an elf from a human by the smell. There was a tiny breeze coming out from one of the cracks in a nearby wall. It was big enough for it to fit through. With a jump and a swing from its web, it reached the crack and scouted to make sure there weren't any predators nearby. It would be a shame to get this far, only to die in the beak of a lucky bird. When the human thief had confronted the elf in the guild hall, it had been the riskiest moment of the spiderling's short life. The mammals came to blows, and it had had to bridge the space between them by jumping from one to the other, using a short strand of web to tie itself to the elf's waist as he ran away from the human. It had been a close call, for the elf was hurt and sick and lacked a couple fingers, but the human wasn't in prime condition either. The spiderling cared little for the details. The danger of the stint had earned it 5 experience points, bringing it to a total of 10. It was now well on its path to adulthood. In a couple more years, it'd be able to speak. But first, it had to survive the dangerous streets of Undercity, a hellish world where everything was bigger than it. But unlike in Hoya, the rules were made up, and there were no trees or bushes for it to hide in. Alleys were as wide, to it, as open roads, and just as exposed. Trying to wade through the sea of legs was out of the question. It'd get crushed, or worse, get noticed and killed for its meager experience points by some child or a cat. It actually was almost killed by a cat when the spiderling ran across a bridge that seemed to extend for years. It only survived by throwing itself out into the deadly waters of the freezing canal below, then launching a web string at the last second toward the bridge to swing its body underneath the bridge's planks. The cat, frustrated, howled at the out-of-reach critter and left. That adventure netted the spiderling another 5 points, a rank increase for its mind attribute, and the first rank in the acrobatic skill. At this rate, it had soon become the most powerful spiderling of its generation. Then it lost a leg when a bird swooped down from out of nowhere, caught the spiderling with its beak before the critter could react, and lifted it in the air, fast as an exhalation, for several feet before the spiderling's leg broke and it fell to the ground onto a convenient heap of steaming horse dung. The bird made another pass, but this time the spiderling expected it and burrowed inside the pile until the bird lost interest. It gained another few experience points, and a rank increase to its spirit, but now its agility was down by 1 point until its leg regenerated. The critter soldiered on. The smell of the sea affirmed it was going in the right direction. Lord Wright had given it instructions to find his smell by the artificial shores of the city, and if the spiderling couldn't find him there, for it to return to the forest and report. The spiderling hoped with all its strength that it'd be able to find Lord Wright by the shores. It doubted that it had survived the return trip to the forest. Its stamina was greatly diminished, and reaching the shores took it all night and most of the following day. The cold and the snow robbed its blood of warmth, and hunger reared its ugly head. If only the spiderling could stop for a few hours so it could hunt. A couple flies would be enough.
But no,
it thought.
I have orders.
There were thousands upon thousands of different smells carried through the cold breeze. It was dizzying. To find a normal human inside this invisible sea? Impossible. To find the dungeon lord to which Mother was pledged? The spiderling had only to find and follow the essence of the dark. There were several trails on the shores, but the strongest one could only belong to a dungeon lord. It brought the spiderling to a humanoid nest that seemed to serve food and provide refuge to beings of different clusters. The critter found the tiny hint of its sister's smell there, along with Lord Wright's personal aroma. Sadly, both trails were cold. They had left the place early in the morning and headed in the direction of the forest. The spiderling stared with dismay at the uncountable legs stomping the wet mud, and upward at the birds that had started to encircle its general location. The spiderling was no more to them than a healthy snack, the same way it thought of flies and mosquitoes. The critter was almost resigned to its fate when it discovered a second trail with Lord Wright's smell, mixed with another, warm and very, very near. Surging with determination, the spiderling headed to it, dancing among the legs and the mud and the dung. It had an urgent message to deliver. Chapter 20. The Ticket. The entrance to the tunnel was just like they had left it, covered by trash and a small pile of snow. The alley was empty, but they had been followed before, so Kes insisted on spending half an hour standing watch outside, scowling at the occasional hobo who dared to wander in their vicinity. Ed was tasked with clearing the tunnels of junk and snow, while Alder sat nearby and groaned pathetically.
"Someone come end my pain,"
the bard whispered with a raspy voice.
"Oh, gods, the pain."
He clutched at his head like it was splitting and groaned again.
"A hangover is not a reason to just sit there, you know,"
Ed pointed out, beginning to get frustrated, as he tossed a wet sackcloth away from the pile. A nest of rats ran from him.
"That's not fair,"
Alder told him. A shy ray of sunlight hinted itself through the cloudy winter sky, and Alder scowled at it like it had spat on his mother.
"You are fresh as a lettuce and got some action last night. Have some mercy, man."
Ed lifted an eyebrow at him.
"From the looks of it, you got some action too."
He tossed away pieces of a broken, rotten chair.
"Maybe,"
Alder said noncommittally.
"Or maybe I didn't. But the price was too high."
He scowled at the sunlight again. The dungeon lord sighed and kicked away what remained of the pile, causing it to collapse inward and reveal the tunnel's entrance. A freezing wind seeped through the black hole.
"Anyway," Alder said, "what are Catelyn and you going to do now?"
He grabbed his new flute and took it out of its sheath, which he had been doing frequently ever since he had bought it. Ed guessed that Alder just liked to make sure it was still there.
"Well," Ed said with a shrug, "while we return to the haunt to arm ourselves,"
he pointed at the bag of silver dust he carried on his belt,
"Catelyn's going to recruit the guild to look for Brandon, just in case Carmick, and my spiderling never encountered him. After we know where he's hiding, we strike at him and Nikolai fast and hard. Then we deal with the wraith on our own terms."
He scratched his chin as he repeated the plan he and Catalan had worked over that morning. He didn't like it much. It hinged on the hope that Nikolai would remain put while they looked for him, and now that Brandon knew Ed was in town.
On the other hand, what else can we do?
That was why he was so anxious to return to the haunt. Not only did he need to arm himself and his friends, he needed to make sure everyone was safe. While he spoke with Alder, Kess had returned from her watch, seemingly satisfied that the coast was clear. She snorted at hearing Ed's words.
Your mental attributes are high enough for you to know that wasn't at all what Alder was asking.
She nodded toward the bard, who was in the process of rolling his eyes at Ed.
He knows what I meant, Alder said.
Not really thought about it much, Ed lied. Who knows? She seems like a great gal. If she wanted.
Kess patted him on his back with a gloved hand on her way down the tunnel.
You poor, hopeless fool.
She continued laughing to herself until her silhouette disappeared into the darkness. Ed crossed his arms and frowned.
What the hell was that about?
Alder showed him his open palms as he followed Kess.
Let's see. A witch, now a thief. Neither of them exactly what a sane man would call great gals.
That's really not fair to either of them.
Don't look at me. I'm not sane either,
Alder said. He still had bits of green goo stuck to his blonde hair.
In my case, though, I'm a bard, so it comes with the job description. Anyway, I'm sensing a pattern here, Ed.
He shrugged.
At this rate, you'll fall in love with a dungeon lady, or a vampire. Probably a dungeon lady vampire, and you'll insist she's a great gal, even as the world burns around you.
The bard chuckled and went inside the tunnel.
Keep going, though, he called from the darkness. A doomed romance will add so much spice when I tell the story.
Ed was left alone, arms crossed, and feeling vaguely indignant.
Vampires? Now that's just silly.
A corpse was a corpse, no matter how much glitter you sparkled over it. He followed his friends out of Undercity. Someone screamed at her down the street. Catalan's nerves, which were on edge, almost made her jump and screech in surprise like a little girl. She composed herself at the last second and turned around.
There you are!
Pris hollered. She was alone, hiding her leather armor underneath a pretty pink cape and a suede jacket that had probably belonged to some rich merchant's daughter.
I've been looking for you all morning.
Catalan grinned sourly and pressed a hand to her forehead. She was still a bit sleep-deprived from last night, and Pris's screaming wasn't helping her headache.
Pris, what are you doing outside?
It was a bad day for thieves to be out in the open. The watch was nervous, and patrols were out in full force through the streets of Undercity, their red capes progressively getting dirtier as they marched across the muddied streets.
I heard about how Brandon betrayed the guild,
Pris said earnestly. She offered Catalan an apologetic smile.
Turns out he was the one embezzling funds from us. Sorry for doubting you. I reckon I acted like an asshole.
Yes,
Catalan said with a frown.
You did.
Then she snorted and patted her friend on the back.
But I forgive you. You could have thrown me out to the dogs the other day in the folly, and you didn't. As far as I'm concerned, we're square.
And like that, the tension between them was gone.
You're too nice, Cat,
Pris told her.
I promise I won't jump to conclusions next time someone accuses you of stealing from the guild.
Excellent,
said Catalan with exaggerated pleasure.
Just as planned. Next time, I'll steal from them for real, and everyone will think I'm innocent again.
Pris barked a laugh and smacked her on the shoulder. The two thieves walked down the street. It was a bright day with few clouds to be seen in the horizon, which was a nice break from the norm. The sunlight mixed with the cold breeze to create a pleasing mixture, almost beatific. It was the kind of day that gave Catalan the impression that nothing could go wrong, that life was beautiful, and that every problem would solve itself in the end. There was a zombie shambling a couple hundred feet away. The small crowd that surrounded it gave the creature ample berth. It had been a woman when it was alive, probably a whore that had frozen to death the previous night. It was missing most toes from its feet, which were black and rotten.
Ugh,
said Pris as they neared the monster.
For all the watch's posturing, the undead plague is heavier today than during the storms.
An enterprising young boy, not older than 13, snuck his way behind the zombie and struck its legs with a wooden mace. The creature howled and crashed to the ground, rotting meat mixing with wet mud, specks of it flying everywhere as it flailed.